Welcome, everyone, to this month's University Colloquium. Heidi Winters-Vogel is going to be talking to us today about her work in social justice theater. I assume this is the title? Oh, it's not your title. Okay. Good. Heidi has been a faculty member here since 2006, I believe. Is that right? Did her MFA work at Penn State University and was involved in theater at various locations between 2000 and 2006. And since she's been here, you've all had an opportunity to see her work in various venues. One of the joys or maybe tribulations of being a theater professor is that their work is much more public than most of us are used to. So we've all had a chance to see Heidi's work before now, and I know I'm looking forward to hearing what she has to say to us today. So welcome, Heidi.
I remember when I was in grade one, and I say grade one very specifically because I started school in Canada. In grade one, my parents sent me to an elementary school that was a distance from our house, and I needed to walk a couple blocks and then get a city bus and then transfer to a school bus before I arrived at the school I attended. This was not a particularly happy time in my life. It was a very difficult time for making friends. And we probably all have memories of being in first grade and having difficulties with friends and relationships and so forth. Unfortunately, there was one boy in my class who was a little over-friendly. He had a crush on me. And I didn't have any problems with boys. I had several brothers, but I didn't have a boy that wanted to hug me and kiss me, and that was very icky. Class was kind of uncomfortable because of that. But not only that, but he rode my bus, as did his brother. I don't remember exactly how old his brother was, but he was big, probably 18, 20, 30 years old. And there was a whole group of friends that gathered around me on the bus. And I remember one time in particular, they all gathered around me and they said, "Kiss her, kiss her, kiss her," to the little guy. And he did. I believe it was the same day when I got on the city bus to go home. I was crying, or at least severely disturbed by my first experience of sexual harassment. And there was a couple older women, and when I say older, I'd say mid-20s, because I was six. A couple of older women who were there, and they smiled at me, and I smiled back, and then they started talking to me. And it was such a gift in that torn up state I was in to have these friendly faces looking at me. In fact, it was so exciting that they were talking to me that I got off at their bus stop. And then they started walking to home, and I followed them. And they got very concerned, and I remember not how I got home. I'm sure I did, but I don't have any memory of anything after the fact that I was following them. But the warmth that I felt from those two young women, from my now advanced age, they were young, those two young women as they welcomed me, and how I felt able to go back to school the next day. Stories connect us. Stories give us connection in terms of our humanity. So the things you now know about me that you didn't know before that had nothing to do with my story is, number one, either I'm Canadian or I lived in Canada for a while. Number two, my parents were not exactly overprotective because I walked two blocks and rode two buses to get to school when I was 6 years old. And thirdly, I'm trusting. I follow people. I probably still do that. Those have nothing to do with my story, but they have to do with your perception of me. We have now made a connection. How many of you have ever been to Canada? Wonderful. How many of you were born in Canada? Okay. How many of you have ever ridden a school bus? Gosh, we have so much in common. How many of you liked riding the school bus? Yeah, okay. We're connected. We're connected. Very good. All right. Another question of sociometry. How many of you got an email from me today that said, open this attachment and we will get some sort of approval? Okay. How many of you opened it? Okay. Change your password immediately. We are connected. We are interwoven, and our destinies are affected by the actions we take in reaction to each other. Stories are what I do as a theater artist, and what I hope to encourage the people, the community around me to engage in. In order to do that, I would like you to share a story. This is your prompt. Think about a time when you were welcomed or not welcomed, and you gained strength from that or were weakened by that interaction. Turn to a person close to you and share your story. How many of you learned something new about the person you were exchanging a story with? Okay, most of you. How many of you related to the story that you were told? Something about it connected to you. Very good. All right. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for taking down the house lights. The actual name of my presentation is Performing Community, Building Civic Practice Committed to Hospitality and Capacity. I am giving the easy words for hospitality and capacity with welcome and strength or weakness. I want to talk today about my journey through my sabbatical and since then, learning how to build communities and how to build capacity within communities for problem solving and social change. I began my journey in the spring of, 2016, so that would be 2015, and did my sabbatical the fall, no, I'm a year off. Fall of 2014 is when I did my sabbatical. But I began it as soon as school was out by engaging in presentations and trainings and workshops with the idea of learning about best practices in the world of social change and theater. I began by searching for a way to connect my faith to my theater work. I've read an article, many of you have read an article in my classes, students, about how church and theater are similar. And there are lots of ways we can go into the list of what commonalities they have. But one of the greatest commonalities they have in many people's eyes is that they are unwelcoming. Another commonality is that my stories are not welcome. I was talking with Matt Carlson, who is finishing up his degree in the seminary and CJP, and I'm advising his graduate project. And he made the comment, the profound comment, that churches seem to be the places that we are least likely to tell our stories. How can it be that our stories, that which makes us who we are, that which makes us human, seems to be the least welcome in the place of our faith, the place where we worship? Often I attend the theater and I recognize no one's story on the stage as reflecting who I am or my journey. Again, stories are what connects us. But if our faith and our art don't honor our stories, then we're not connected to those around us. My journey began with a woman who introduced me to this idea of community connections in theater. Arlene Goldbard, and she says, "With my own eyes, I have seen theater mobilize a community, alter the self-image of its members, peel back layers of disinformation to expose galvanizing truths. I've never met Ms. Goldbard, but she accepted my friend request on Facebook this last weekend. There's hope. She has written extensively for decades about this emerging field, which she created, of connecting community and their art to build strength and to build capacity and resilience. In this way, my spiritual journey reflects my journey as a theater artist. I have moved from traditional theater, traditional presentational theater, to a theater that says, who is sitting out there and how are they involved in the meaning making of what happens up here? The audience in my mind has changed from those people that come and I entertain to co-creators of the event that's happening. Naomi Izuka, a playwright who takes historical myths and collects community stories to create new pieces of work, speaks about what she does in this way. Let's start here. Let's say myth is memory. Let's say making theater is the act of remembering. Myths are condensed particles of cultural memory, cautionary tales, magic spells, incantations to raise the dead. They are volatile pieces of a larger puzzle, human riddles we return to. Myth reminds us of a simple fact. There were those who came before. They are our kin. We are more alike them than not. Stories. Stories are who we are and who we belong to and how we connect. Peter Brook, in his seminal work, An Empty Stage, says that there are two ways of speaking about the condition. There is the process of inspiration, by which all the positive elements of life can be revealed, and there is the process of honest vision, by which the artist bears witness to whatever it is that he has seen, he or she. Let me do that again. There's a process of inspiration by which all the positive elements of life can be revealed. Emphasis on the positive. And there is a process of honest vision by which the artist bears witness to whatever it is he or she has seen. The first process depends on revelation. It can't be brought about by holy wishes. The second depends on honesty, and it mustn't be clouded by holy wishes. Two ways. A one that emphasizes the positive and says, this is what we aspire to be, and that's all we're going to talk about. And another way that says, this is where we are. How do we move from here? That is what Arlene Goldberg talked about. And that's what I studied and investigated on my trip. I've discovered that this form of participatory, devised, applied social justice theater is connected but twisty. I began by investigating the idea of playback theater. Playback theater is a communal process of creation. And this is a photo of Inside Out, which is EMU's playback theater company, and myself in the middle with hair. Joe Salas, one of the co-founders of Playback Theater, says, listening to stories with openness and responding with artistry is a unique way to build awareness, empowerment, and change. It foregrounds the individual stories, honors them, and then builds a larger context in the minds of all the people present. If I tell you a story, it reminds you of a story. You share a story with your neighbor, which connects your neighbor to your story. They share a story with you, and suddenly we have a communal event and a communal narrative. Audience comfort is cultivated, and the environment of welcome to vulnerability in this event is how the storytelling is built. Playback theater invites the audience to be part of the meaning makers. Nothing is profound or performed or honored unless it is offered by the audience. One form of this kind of theater. I'm going to cross again in front of the light. I spent some time in Chicago with Michael Rode, And he introduced me to a triumvirate of ideas that expanded my idea of what art can be. He separates art into three different forms: studio practice, social practice, and civic practice. He is, by the way, the founder of the Center for Performing and Civic Practice, so you can see where his loyalties lie. Studio practice. This is where the artist works on their own, on their process, on their product. And this studio practice needs an audience, and it is centered in the artist's studio and designed then to go out and find a response. This is what most theater is. We create here on the stage, we rehearse, we build, we perfect often, and then we invite the audience to come in and witness it. Studio practice. Social practice. Social practice is when the artist works with non-artists on an artist-led vision. This is the idea that I, as an artist, go into an organization and say, I've got this great idea. Tell me your stories, and then I'm going to put together a play about your stories. I am engaging socially. I'm inviting the audience into the creative process, but I, the artist, own the vision. Civic practice. This is when the artist co-designs with non-artists, develops collaboration around the issues identified by the non-artist as community needs. What Michael Rode is doing and what the Center for Performance and Civic Practice is doing is saying, we're a bunch of artists that want to be helpful. Let's go out and find where our talents, our skills can be put to use by the community in pursuit of their objectives. All of these three forms of theater are very legitimate. All these three forms of art are very legitimate. None of them is privileged over the other ones, except to say civic practice is new, and we are working to find out how we can be of service to communities, which is particularly resonant in my version of Christianity, in my faith journey, this idea that I serve those who I have been put in contact with. The community sets the context. The artist serves that vision. The second theater artist that I came in contact with personally in my trip was David Diamond. I went back up to Canada, to Vancouver, and met with David Diamond, who since 1981 has been working with Theater for Living. This is an organization that began working with the idea of theater of the oppressed, which is the idea that theater needs to separate the oppressed from the oppressors, and the oppressors can go away as the oppressed take power through theater and claiming their own. David Diamond says that's limited. He studied with Augusto Boal, the founder of Theater of the Oppressed, and said, the lines between the oppressed and the oppressors are not always clear. How do we do this kind of work without always having to have the bad guy? And so he went to systems theory and said, it's the systems that are the bad guy, not the oppressed-oppressor dichotomy. He began his work primarily working with Native populations in Canada, with communities that are scarred by their experience, by their forebearers' experience in the mission schools. In the mission schools that sought to obliterate their culture, that often ended up abusing them sexually and physically, and denied their value, their cultural value, their language value, their value as human beings by trying to make them into white North Americans from Europe originally, which wasn't going to happen. So we have a whole group of people in Canada that are dealing with the pathology of generations of abuse. And he has found an audience. Collaborators. He has found collaborators by going in these communities, and they talk about their issues. They find ways to perform, to civically dialogue about their issues, and using performance and performative activities, embody the pain and bring it to the forefront so then the community can say, oh, my father abused me because he was abused by his parent. How do I stop that cycle? I drink because I was abused, because they were abused. How do I stop that cycle? I am not going to continue living as a victim because now I've discovered that this is a community pain, not just a personal pain. I'm not alone in solving this problem, but I am not going to a social service agency for them to fix it. I am banding together with my community that has suffered this as well, and we are going to find a solution for the problem. And in his 30 years of working, this has proved to be very effective. He works to strengthen communities and their capacity for tackling their systemic pathologies all across Canada. Recognizing that communities are complexly integrated living organisms and invites them to engage in constructive social change, moving from various forms of violence to respective engagement. Another group that I came in contact with during my sabbatical is a consortium of universities gathered together underneath the auspices of the Imagining America label, artists and scholars in public life. This particular photo is from their most recent conference, which took place in Baltimore. They identified the community that they were going to do their conference in, and this is before the events in Baltimore that grabbed national headlines. But in processing their participation in the community by holding their national conference there, they dug into what the community needed. They connected with arts organizations in Baltimore, with the local universities, the local colleges, the organizations that are connected to the populations. And this picture represents what Baltimore looked like last summer. And this became the theme of the conference. How do we, as artists and scholars, respond to this specific community in this specific time, and then take that back to our schools, take it back to our own milieu, and use the tools that we have used in Baltimore, or the year before in Atlanta, or next year in Milwaukee, to affect change in our own context. This was the most amazing collection of artists and scholars and researchers and thinkers that I've ever been involved in, and I will continue to be involved in. And hint, hint, nudge, nudge, I really hope that I can get EMU to be involved in this organization too. They are interested in encouraging publicly engaged scholarship, and they define that as partnerships of university knowledge and resources with those of the public and private sectors to enrich scholarship, research, creative activity, and public knowledge, enhance curriculum, teaching and learning, prepare educated, engaged citizens, strengthen democratic values and civic responsibility, address and help solve critical social problems, and contribute to the social good. Well, now that was easy. Woo! But they try. And what they've done that I found particularly valuable in my work in this area is they have identified assessment procedures, which they call integrated assessment, which is about developing research methods and protocols that are integrated in the community action, in the artistic events. And this has led me to much of the work that I am doing with Roger Foster. We'll talk about that. Roger Foster, as we teach a class at SBI this summer on engaged practice and research. The idea that we as human beings have stories is not new. The idea that we as human beings connect with our stories and connect with each other is not new. The idea that we can make this a standard part of our practice as theater artists is what is emerging and what I discovered in my work through my sabbatical. How I hope to bring this to my work here is multifold. I began my sabbatical with the hope of bringing together all these practitioners and putting together a text, a book, on the work that they're doing. Many of these people are working in isolation and doing their thing quietly. Theater artists can be really good at self-promotion, but most of the people, well, universally, all the people I talk to are not self-promoters. They're too busy involved in what their community is doing. So I saw an opportunity to step in and get them to contribute to a work that we could spread around to connect these people, to get other people interested in what was going on, because they're all thinking along this connective rope, but with lots of different ideas and different changes and adjustments as they work on their field. I still hope that's going to happen because I think it's really important. In fact, I was looking for a text for a class I teach, Theater and Justice, and I couldn't find one, which is why I wanted to go ahead and do this. And the book rep from Rutledge said, you need to write it because it's not out there. But I found I have so much to learn, and there is so much going on that the bubbling up and the new ideas for knowledge creation and for tangents that are important to the central work but can contribute to it, the newness of the field is daunting. So I am practicing. I'm connecting with the thinkers, with the doers, and I am practicing and connecting them with my students. Whoops. One of the other people I contacted was Kurt Toflin. Kurt is the founder of Shakespeare Behind Bars. Many of you may have seen the documentary of the work he does. His community is primarily men incarcerated in prisons in Alabama and in Michigan. The final woman that I want to talk about, yes, there's women doing this as well, is Lisa Jo Epstein. I met Lisa Jo when I did a training with her around Theater of the Oppressed. She is a practitioner that lives in Philadelphia. And if you look at this picture and you look up at the person whose hair is sticking up, you may recognize Brooke Snyder. She's a graduate of EMU, a graduate of the EMU Theater Department, who went on to get her master's in applied theater from NYU and then said, where do I get a job? And I said, you need to talk to Lisa. And she's now part of that organization. Lisa has worked extensively in community organizing. She's worked with schools, with incarcerated youth, with social organizations of all kinds, gathering stories and working for interventions based in those stories. A new field that she is moving into with her new organization called Just Act, if you can read the t-shirts, it says Just Act. They combine Theater of the Oppressed with playback theater. When I talked with her recently about what she's doing with Just Act, they were working with an organization called Chester Made. How many of you are familiar with Chester, Pennsylvania? Okay, not a shining economic light. They have been through some serious economic push and one of those old school cities built around manufacturing, and the manufacturing plants have left. And what that has, what the detritus that is left in Chester is empty buildings, a drug problem, a primarily minority population with no particular political power, and the community leader decided they needed to do something. So they organized this organization called Chester Made, and they decided the only thing they had going for them was their artists. They couldn't develop new manufacturing. They couldn't develop service organizations that had intense capital needs, but they had artists that maybe they could scale up to help their city. So they contracted with Just Act, and they said, come in and interview the people that still live here, our community, and find out what strengths, what artistic capacity we have. And so Just Act came in, and they did very much a form of playback where they gathered the stories, and then they gave them back to the people that told them, shared them with a larger community, and built a groundswell of artistic connection. This has only happened within the last couple years, but there has been some pretty significant results of this work. And you can go to Chester Made and find out more information about the increase in employment, the revitalization of whole blocks, the positive attitude that many members of this community have now as opposed to when they started. This hasn't solved all the problems in Chester, but one thing it has done is the action is community-based. The action is community-initiated, and it is the community solving its problems. Lisa Jo has taken this idea and worked with other communities and is beginning to work with other communities on this kind of a revitalization effort. And it is in the ground floor, and Brooke, and also Michael Bodner, for those of you who remember him, he also has been contracted to work with them on several projects. So this is the kind of work that our students are doing and are interested in and are successful with. Performing community, building civics practice, committed to hospitality and capacity. My goal as a theater artist is to invite you to participate in events, in stories, in the creation of environments where change can happen. My goal as a Christian is to embrace your stories, to do as my colleague Jerry Holsapple did so brilliantly this morning and in his artist talk on Friday, and go to the gallery and see his work if you haven't seen it. Exhibit a love for our humanity, our brokenness, our hope that comes because we can share our stories with each other. The path is never straight. It's twisty. There are knots. There are new discoveries to be made. But by connecting with each other, building on each other's stories, honoring each other's humanity and brokenness, then we are able to then move forward and build change together. Thank you. Yeah, Steve.
So I was particularly interested in the story you told about the Native communities in Canada, partly because I took a cross-cultural group up to some of these communities in Canada and had heard these stories firsthand. So one of the things I'm wondering about, when somebody who looked like he was European in background enters into a minority community, how did that interaction work? Was he invited by the community? Did he approach them? I was wondering if you could give us a little more of that story.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking that question, because this is really important. He never enters a community until he's been invited. And he never enters a community unless they can exhibit significant support for the community for his presence. Because he is European, it is very important that he is welcomed and that their hospitality is extended to him, not as an honored guest, but as a servant, again, a servant, in pursuit of unearthing, revealing, sharing their stories. So absolutely, he apologizes in many ways for his European descent. His company is multicultural, and he doesn't deal only with Native communities, but that is a large one, and historically has been more of what they've done. In recent years, As Vancouver, if you know anything about Vancouver, it has exploded with this population, with this multicultural population, particularly from Hong Kong. And he has found much more work than closer to home, working with the immigrant community that the immigrant communities that are there in Vancouver. He is adamant, though. He's been contracted, or organizations have come to him and said, we want you to come and deal with this group. And he will say, do they want me? Well, no, but what you bring is very important for them. And he will decline. Yeah.
So, Heidi, you've been interacting with the Center for Justice and Peacebuilding here at the university, teaching classes, taking classes, I think?
Yeah.
Take the analysis class?
I submitted my final project to Gloria at 11:45 last night for a class I took last summer. I didn't get an official extension. But I got to tell a quick story because that's what connects us. I want to connect with the students here. I submitted the wrong draft. And so I turn it in to turn it in, and it gives me the receipt. And I'm like, oh, shoot. And so I go and try to submit the other one. And so Gloria, I'm certain, if she's gotten through her email box, sees this note for me. This is, oh, no, I sent you the wrong one. Here's the correct one. I'm sorry, I'm way tangentizing. But so, yes, I took a class, and Gloria and I have bonded on this, even though she may not realize it. But don't open the other one that says that it's you have to sign into the Google account.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, answer your question,
everybody,
Jane.
Who's been spammed with that, yes, please. Yeah, there's a big thing. Don't open any documents where you have to put your email in. So I'm curious what you are learning from this
okay.
kind of exchange. Like, what's the future for our collaboration? Where do you see EMU being positioned? Are we going to be able to be one of these really creative? Yeah, whatever.
I hope so. Thank you. That is a question that I didn't get to. The last part of my sabbatical report was all about what I've done since, and I kind of ran out of time. So thank you for opening that opportunity. Yes, I took a conflict analysis class from Gloria last summer, and it is the first class I've taken in 15 years and had to write a paper that someone was grading. So that was kind of a traumatic experience. But it was an incredibly useful experience, and I've learned a lot from it. And I hope to take more classes at CJP, because it is an area that I'm very interested in pursuing, and it connects profoundly with the work I'm doing. I've also done a starlight as I work through trauma and how we deal with trauma. Roger and I are teaching a class this summer at SPI about using performance as a research tool. And I could go off on a whole nother 40-minute presentation on using performance as a research tool and how embodied knowledge, it tends to be much more accurately reportable than head knowledge. And if you're doing qualitative research, the quality of your responses are much stronger if you can get people to live in their own stories and connect in community, and then you get answers that come from that shared knowledge as opposed to from what they think that the research wants to hear or what they think they should believe. So that's what Roger and I are going to be talking about this summer in our class. Last summer, we co-taught a class on using theater techniques for community building, and we brought in students from all over the world and all over the area, up in Baltimore and other places, in a really profound examination of how the tools of theater can open up communities and build communities. And so there are those two classes, and the class I took with Gloria. In addition, we are moving towards this idea of advanced studies in arts and social justice. And particularly my area, which is theater, that we have students that have gone through CJP that are clamoring for the tools that allow them to engage deeply with the communities in a micro level, in freeing up stories, in building connections and building bridges. So This is a project that I'm currently involved with Jane, with Jim Smucker, with Jerry Holsapple, with the VACA and the theater department, and we'll see where that goes. Did that answer your question? What did I miss?
Well, I don't want to dominate, but I did have another question.
Yeah.
Chester, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So,
and Vancouver. So both those places have big public economic, as you pointed out. How is the theater affecting that? What's connecting it? So, I mean, in terms of British Columbia, the Native peoples have not signed their treaties. There's all kinds of land claim issues. There's poverty as a result of not being able to do economic development very well. You know, that whole area has a lot of challenges, mm-hmm. That are not just personal. So how does the theater piece attach to the large public policy type conflicts? And, or put another way, what would you do in Flint, Michigan?
Clean up the damn water. Sorry. Good question. And the two communities are so different. Vancouver is incredibly vibrant economically, but that economic growth has pretty much left the Native populations behind. Flint, I don't know that there's anybody doing well in Flint except at the university in town, and I've lost the name of it, where they pretty much stay separate from the... Did I say Flint? I meant Chester. From the rest of Chester. So, in answer to your question, I'm going to try and see what David Diamond would answer, because he's been in this far longer than I have, or Lisa Jo Epstein. But the idea that these communities need to fix or need to respond to the rampant alcoholism, the rampant sexual abuse, before they can move to the next step. And then when those things are faced and responded to, then the community can then repair relationships with each other and build solidarity around moving forward, economically speaking, to the power structures. So it takes time, but it is a systemic change that should deeply affect the systems. Quite often when you have social workers come in and try to fix problems, they are bringing in knowledge from the outside and imposing it on communities, and it doesn't stick. What David Diamond, what Lisa Jo, what Kurt Toflin, what Michael Rode, what a lot of people are doing in the theater of the oppressed world are saying, you guys, once you've accepted your problems, probably know how to fix them. Let us help you free that up. And so it's slow. This is not big change. This is not going to fix the world overnight. But the hope, and as is borne out in Chester, it is working. And it is changing things on the basic systemic level so that people are healthier to affect changes on the broader level. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Heidi, for a thought-provoking talk. Thanks again, Heidi. And remind me, next month's colloquium speaker is Michael Emerson, yes, who's doing some really interesting work on new urban theories. Some of you may be familiar with his work. He's done work in the past on integrated congregations and how those congregations work. And now he's extending some of that work into thinking about how people are imagining new forms of urban life. So come back and hear more about that.